Hello, my beautiful beanies, and welcome to The Bean, the weekend edition. First, with yesterday's news, I and Glenn ZB, we're looking back both Saturday and Sunday. Sounds like a weekend to me. Ross Kemp, ex-EastEnders guy, now extreme television guy. Ben Ainslie, an extreme boating guy. Meatloaf, just an extreme guy. And extreme things happening to one of Jack Tame's favourite restaurants. But for any of that, it's been an extreme week or so for Sean Johnson.
What did you make of him as a coach and as a communicator? Because when he came out in the announcement of the Kiwi squad and said the key is the we, that's now become almost a catch cry, the butt of jokes. Was he a good communicator, Sean? Because it seems like he's been judged because he struggles on that front.
Yeah, and he's not the best, you know, he's not the most savvy person, you know, in terms of a conversation, like, especially, you know, getting his point across. But he, at the end of the day, like, he gets his point across, you know what I mean? Like, however he wants to get there, he can do it his own way. That's what makes him David Kidwell. So, yeah, I've seen some of those, I guess, those things that have come out with the keys and the we and all that. And, yeah, we had a, you know, like, we throw it out. We have a little chuckle. He has a little chuckle about it, you know? Like, it's, he understands how it got taken. And, geez, actually, after the game on the weekend, people were saying to us, the fee is in the G. You know, like, it's sort of become a bit of a slogan almost. And, yeah, we sort of have to have a little chuckle about it. But, look, Kitty's Kitty. He doesn't have to justify to anyone how he goes about his business and gets his point across. To me, as long as that point's coming across, and I'm happy with however he wants to do it. So, again, I think it might be some people looking for a way to get at him or a title or a story. But, yeah, as players, you know, obviously all we want to do is win. And if he can do that for us, if he can't, then I'm sure they'll have those discussions and make those decisions.
Yeah, so it still sounds like there's a general attitude there that they're annoyed at sports journalists because they're looking for a story. I'm pretty sure journalists are generally looking for a story, and if you think that they aren't, you are the most naive of all the naive people. Ross Kemp goes out and talks to the most dangerous people in the world in his television program, well, his current one. Way back, he used to be on the EastEnders. He joined Jack Tame Saturday morning.
I wondered, when I saw you were doing a stage show, how on earth that actually works, because so much of the intrigue in your programming is or comes from you being on the ground, being in a hazardous, traumatic environment. Mm.
Yeah, hostile environments is predominantly where most of the documentaries are set. But I think what the stage show will endeavour to do will be to show you what happens behind the scenes. The actual docs are only about 43 minutes long, and as you know, you are generally often on the ground for a lot longer than 43 minutes to get a film. So it will be about how the team work together, how we go about researching some of the funnier and lighter moments that have happened, particularly in some of the war zones that we've travelled to. Believe it or not, you do laugh a lot occasionally when you're being shot at. And when things go wrong. Also, some of the human aspects that we don't show in the documentary. Yeah. And also some of the kind of the very sad things that have happened. So hopefully, if you come along to the show, you'll laugh a bit, cry a bit, and hopefully be a little more informed for coming to it.
It sounds very similar to my goals when I do these podcasts. I'm really just trying to make you cry above anything else. That's what I'm going for there. Every time I hear anybody talk about the America's Cup this far out from the actual America's Cup, it makes me want to cry. However, Ben Ainslie sounds reasonably excited by the whole thing.
Ben, when you sat down with Dan Bernasconi, the chief designer for Team NZ, and you were there with Terry Hutchison, you're in London, and they sat down and said, right, here's the boat. Tell me this. What was your initial reaction?
Yeah, to be honest, I was expecting something extreme because, you know, where we come from with the America's Cup, the foiling multi-holes, everyone is, whether you're a sailor out there on the water or you're a spectator, a fan, you know, people like the speed and the excitement. And, you know, there are a number of reasons why I think we had to go back to a monohull, and to try and create a monohull with similar speeds, you're going to have to be pretty extreme, and this is an extreme design. But it, you know, it's, as we said, it's an exciting design. It's really going to push the designers, the engineers, to find ways to make sure this boat sticks together. For one, I mean, structurally, it's going to be a real challenge, and find those areas of performance gain to get the fastest boat.
Crucially for the America's Cup going forward here, Ben, and we know Bermuda, San Francisco, maybe we didn't have the challenger numbers we wanted. Now, for example, if this thing, it's a big if at the moment, goes ahead in Auckland, they're already talking about 8 permanent syndicate bases here. For us, does this make this event more appealing with this boat for you guys, for your entry when it opens on January the 1st?
It's definitely very appealing from a competitive standpoint when you look at the design, the technical challenge, the sailing challenge. You know, the one thing I would say about this boat is it's going to be very expensive. It's not going to be a cheap campaign to be successful, to be in with a chance of beating Emirates Team New Zealand. It's going to be an expensive program. And so, that's something, as the class rule gets written over the next 3 or 4 months, how can that be taken into account with some of the one design or supplied elements, for example, that can really help to drive the cost down for these boats and these campaigns? Because as it currently stands, if you were quite open with this concept of boat, you could be a very, very expensive game, and that will really limit the numbers of teams that can come down.
Oh, it could be expensive to run an America's Cup campaign. How unusual. Somebody who may be able to afford one might be Meatloaf. I think he's made some money over the... I don't know why. This guy might, though. He's written a book about... Bat Out of Hell specifically, but Meatloaf more generally.
Nice timing, obviously, the 40th anniversary. Is that why you did that?
That's precisely why I did it. I mean, that was definitely the starting point. But also because... I've known and interviewed Meatloaf throughout the course of his career. I first met him back in the days when he was still touring the album Bat Out of Hell. And then most recently, this time last year, we were talking after the release of what he now insists in the book will be his last album, Braver Than We Are. And it just seemed very poignant that... he was explaining that there would be no new albums, probably not any tours, and that essentially he would be 70 this year, which he is now, and that he was effectively going to retire. And so it doesn't mean he doesn't make public appearances, but he very much sees his performing and singing career now as in his past.
Yeah. Well, he's of poor health now as well, so we can see it. So this is the perfect time to write a book about Meatloaf.
Can't stand Meatloaf. I can't stand those songs. I feel like they're kind of pretend songs, songs that are almost making fun of other songs, but doing it in a way that people don't realise it's what they're... I just feel like people are taken for a ride when they say... Like, I feel the same way about Dr. Hook. There are just certain acts where you can't take the song seriously, and that annoys me for some reason. I don't know why. We're going to finish up here with something Jack feels very passionately about, his local Chinese restaurant.
Last week, my parents decided to move away from Ōtautahi. My mum has a new job in a new part of New Zealand, and for the first time in my life, none of my immediate family will live in Christchurch. I booked flights home, and last weekend we planned dinner to celebrate. But Fusan caught on fire. An electrical fault in the kitchen, they said. It's closed for the immediate future. It won't reopen its doors for months. It was funny, Dad took me by at the weekend and we peered through the windows at tables in the dark at about the time they'd usually be lighting up, opening on a Saturday. Instead of garlic and chili and deep-fried stuff, the place still smelt of smoke. Fusan was dark, it was silent and empty. Dad is a bit poetic. He reckoned the whole thing felt symbolic.
Nothing worse than not being able to go to your favourite restaurant, apart from your favourite restaurant closing down completely. and never being able to go there ever again. We don't have a Mexican place in Orewa anymore. We used to have one that, you know, it wasn't the best in the world, but at least it was somewhere you could go for a decent bowl of nachos and a margarita. And now it's just a sort of a grill, which is not really my thing. Once again, finished the podcast, not really on topic. Sorry about that. It'll probably happen again tomorrow. That was the weekend edition. Tomorrow's will be a weekday version. I'll see you then. I'm Ben ZB.